Hi, this is Rabbi Arlovsky, and welcome back to the Rabbi Arlovsky Show. Whether you're watching with our friends over at Torah Anytime, or wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, we're happy to have you along. And by the way, if anyone's interested in sponsoring an episode as an honor or in memory, or just because you like what we're doing here and want to help us keep producing the podcast, so please go to my website, rabbiarlovsky.com, where you can sponsor an episode. Okay, we are into Elul. Begin the Yimei Hadin. Hine bohes yom hadin. Hine bohes yom hadin. As I mentioned, I still have not been booked for Rosh Hashanah. But in any event, I want to give an idea that I think is very important today when we talk about preparing for din. So those of you who have been keeping up with the Daf Yomi, we finished Gittin. Just before that, we did Sota. And you'll no doubt remember this Gemara in Sota on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. It's talking about Yanai. Malka. Yanai is a terrible story. Terrible story. Yeah. The last of the five surviving Maccabee brothers with Rosh Shimon and Maccabee. All the other four died. And his son, Yochanan Hyrcanus, was the Kohen Gadol. And at some point, they took the Malchus for themselves. It wasn't Yochanan Hyrcanus, it was his son. But they took the Malchus. And that's the reason that Rebbe left the Chashmonaim out of the Mishnah, because since he comes from Malchus Beis David, and they usurped the kingship, says Chassam Sofer, that's why he left them out of the Mishnah altogether. But Shimon Maccabee obviously was a big tzaddik, and his son Yochanan Hyrcanus, it says, Altamin ba'atzmecha, don't ever trust in yourself, because at the age of 80, he became a tzaduki, right? The Perushim were what we today call the Chachamim, what they call the Pharisees, and the Tzadukim, what they call the Sadducees. Those were the people who rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh. And Rabbi Yochanan Hyrcanus went over to the side of the Tzadukim. It was a tragic end to the story. And his wife was captured by the Greeks. Now there's a din, midrabanan, that a shvuya, a woman who was captured, is usher to the kahuna, because we're afraid that she may have had relations with a non-Jew, and therefore that is forbidden to marry a Kohen, someone who's had that situation. So really, Rabbi Yochanan Hyrcanus should have gotten divorced his wife, but he didn't. And he had a son, Yanai, who midrabanan was a halal. Now, the tzadukim realized they had an opportunity here. So when Yanai took over, he made himself melech, and the tzadukim had his ears and were able to influence him. And he says, the rabbis will reject you. And he says, why would you say that? He says, because they won't hold you a Kohen. He says, well, of course I'm a Kohen. My father was the Kohen Gadol. He says, you know what? Come out in the begadim of the Kohen Gadol and see what happens. And sure enough, he comes out in the begadim of the Kohen Gadol, and the Chachamim are surprised, to say the least. And they say, listen, Yanai, it's enough to be the king. You don't have to also be the Kohen Gadol. That was diplomatic. It didn't help. And he killed out the Chachamim. Terrible thing. Wife of the Chacham, Yoshua ben Prachia, who was the Av based and escaped to Egypt. And Shimon ben Shetach was the sister of his, was the brother to Yanai's wife, Shlonsion Amalka, and she hid him until the coast was clear. Anyway, Yanai on his deathbed, he's realizing now that he's done a terrible thing. Sometimes people do terrible things, they finally come to a recognition. And as he's at the end of his life. He tells his wife. This is what the Gemara, Sota Chaf Beis Amud Beis, says. Amalei Yanai Malka L'Dabai Sayhu. He says to his wife, to Shamsina Malka, Altis Yari Min Aprushim, V'lomi Misha Ein Aprushim. Don't worry about the Pharisees. Don't worry about the Sadducees. Tzadukim, I'm good with. And the Prushim are not vindictive that way. Eliminat Tzvuyim. You just have to worry about the hypocrites. Shadomim leprushim. They pretend that they're Prushim, and they're not. They're really Rishayim. Shema'asehen kimaisa zimri umevakshin schar kipinchas. You know the story. Yeah, at the end of Parshas Bullock, Zimri does a terrible aveira, and Pinchas kills him. Because of this, he becomes a Kohen. And so he says, listen, you don't have to worry about anybody except the phonies and the hypocrites. Those are the worst. And they'll look at you like they're your friend, and turn around and stab you in the back. You can't trust anything that they say. The hypocrites are the most dangerous thing. The Chazal say, "Oy lanu miyom adin." How do you know? We learn from Yosef. Why? Because Yosef knew he had these dreams, and he knew that he had to get his father to come down to Egypt with his 11 brothers and bow down to him. That was the second dream. The first dream was that the 11 sheaves would bow down to him, and that was fulfilled when he set up a situation that Binyamin came down, and when they all bowed down to him, that was the first dream. But the second dream was the sun, the moon, and the stars, so he has to get Yaakov to bow down to him too with the brothers, and then he can reveal himself. And he doesn't go the distance. He breaks down before he finishes the fulfillment of the second dream. And Yehuda comes to him. Vayigash, I love Yehuda. He comes, Vayigash, armed. Yeah. Vidaber, Lashon Kosha. He comes in, guns blazing. And he says, what kind of a person are you? I have an elderly father who's in Israel, 130 years old. Yeah. He already lost one of his children from that second wife of his, Rachel. And now you want to take the other one and make him into a slave? What kind of a person takes a child away from an elderly man? What kind of a person would cause this kind of pain to somebody? And Yehuda is up there and he's carrying on. And Yosef says, Ani Yosef. Is my father still alive? As a Beis Halevi, what he said was, how come you didn't have this cheshbon when you sold me into slavery? Didn't you think about what it would do to your father? Didn't you understand the pain it would cause him? And the brothers just were devastated. Because they came in with this righteous indignation. How dare you? Then Yosef says, you hypocrites. And that's the toughest thing. The hardest thing is when we see that we have a philosophy and that philosophy is nonsense. And today, we live in a world where the hypocrisy is so intense. I apologize for borrowing from secular culture, but it surrounds us. Yeah. The Academy Awards, which was supposed to be given out for the best movie, set up all kinds of conditions. You have to have X number of these kind of people, X number of that, or your movie will not be considered. So some of the greatest movies that were ever made could not win the Academy Award today. Yeah, it's all for other considerations other than great movie making. But at the Academy Awards this past year, they started with a denouncement of violence. Violence in the Ukraine, violence here, and how terrible violence is. And then a guy gets up a comedian, to give out an award, and he makes a joke. And a famous actor didn't like the joke, and he came up on stage and smacked him. Now me, now I understand the guy was in shock on national television in front of the entire world. But I would have said, you hypocrites. You stand here and denounce violence and you watch this guy beat me and you don't say a word? Later on in that evening, that fellow won an award and he got a standing ovation from the same people who denounced violence. And now they're giving a standing ovation to this guy who went and attacked somebody because he didn't like his joke. You hypocrites. There was a comedian by the name of Ricky Gervais, I think. This clip going around where he was at the Golden Globes. And he says, I want to make one thing clear, he says. Tonight we're going to give out awards for your acting, for your directing, whatever it may be. Get up there, say thank you, and sit down. Do not make any political speeches because you're all a bunch of hypocrites. You're a bunch of phonies. He says, you come out, you're in favor of this, in favor of that, unless your movie has to play in China, and then you'll do whatever they want. Or for this market, or for that market. You work for companies that abuse people, you know, and hurt people, and do the worst things in the world. And if Iran had a television station, you'd work for them. You don't care about anything. You get up here and you spout all your political nonsense, and you're a bunch of hypocrites. Wow. President Trump had classified documents that he was supposed to turn over and he didn't. Hillary Clinton had unbelievable amounts of it, of classified documents on unprotected servers. And then she acid washed the drive. Talk about obstruction of justice. And the head of the FBI at the time said, well, we don't have enough evidence to convict her. Not enough evidence? Joe Biden, they found boxes and boxes of classified documents going back to when he was a senator, when he didn't have the power to declassify documents. And they were in an unprotected garage and in his office. Wasn't charged. Trump had them in a locked room in Mar-a-Lago. He's going to go to jail. He had classified documents. And people look at this and say, the hypocrisy is so unbelievable. During COVID, there was unbelievable lockdowns. And the Democrats were the most vocal about it. I'm not coming out on one side or the other. It's just a fact. Governor Newsom arrested people who opened up their restaurants. Arrested people who broke the curfews, arrested. He put them in jail. And then he went to a fancy restaurant without a mask and a bunch of his friends and had a party. That was okay. What a hypocrite. Governor of Michigan, she said, no one's allowed to go out. You're not allowed to mow your lawn. You're not allowed this. And somebody goes out, they would arrest them. Except for her husband who took his boat out, you know, went boating. That was okay. Representative AOC was decrying Florida, they not having the lockdowns, not making people wear masks, DeSantis, all these kind of things. Then she went on vacation to Florida, was seen, you know, going around to parties and stuff without a mask. The hypocrisy. At least pretend. Pretend that you believe in something. Let's go through the motions, but don't just spit in everybody's face. The end of Saita, the Mishnah, when it lists what's going to happen before Mashiach comes, it says truth is going to be very rare. Yeah? Trump did not create the term fake news. It preceded him, where people report news that is clearly false. I remember during the Democratic debates, 2020, they asked every person who was running for president, every single one of them, would you outlaw late-term abortions? And every one of them said, no. Every one of them. I saw the debate. I saw it myself. DeSantis was just being interviewed by a reporter from NBC. And he was asked about abortion. He says, look, what the Democrats are doing with late-term abortions, I mean, that's infanticide. You're killing children. He goes, I have to push back on that. She says, no Democrat has said that. Everybody running for president said it. The Democratic governor of Virginia said, when I was a doctor, I would wait till the child was born and then ask the mother if she wanted the kid or not. And if not, then we would dispose of it. Post-birth abortion. It's called murder. But we figure if we change the thing from killing a person to aborting a fetus, then it's okay. Even in the ninth month. And they would ask them, even in the ninth month? Yes, that's a question for a mother, for a woman to make with her doctor, and the government has no place in this. And she just looks at him and lies through her teeth. There is a very well-known Torah personality. I won't call him a gadol. I don't think he's an adam gadol, but he's a Torah personality. And part of his presentation is coming out against cell phones, smartphones, and how terrible they are. And yeah, that talks about it a lot. Then someone took a picture of him in the car talking on a cell phone. If you're going to talk about things, there are certain rabbonim who have railed against the concept of a Pesach hotel. I have never railed against the concept of a Pesach hotel. I happen to think you'll have a better Pesach at home. There are times that I've gone away to Pesach hotels, and I said it's a great vacation, but I didn't feel it was a meaningful Pesach. In my own way, I tried to make it a meaningful Pesach for the people where I was, but, you know, okay, it's really tough to do. The last time I got an offer for a Pesach hotel, it was before Corona. I got 6 offers. Yeah, 1 in Eretz Yisrael, 1 in Mexico, one in California, and 3 in the New York area, you know, the tri-state area. And they said, we would love to have you for Pesach. I said, listen, I'm not leaving my family. The idea of having this chus, of being able to go to a fancy hotel and stay in a beautiful room and have delicious meals, which I've had, is only kedai if I can give my family that experience. So then I'm willing to give up on having Pesach at home. I like Pesach at home. I like my dishes. I like the food that we make. I like the Seder in my house. I like everything about it. I don't want to go someplace else. But I'll do it if I can give my children that experience, because I know that it's a big treat. So every place said the same thing. Sure, what's involved? I said, at the time, you know, 8 rooms and 20 tickets from Israel. So 2 people said, are you out of your mind? And I said, I didn't ask for it. You asked me. I told you, I don't want to leave my family. So if you want to bring my family, that's what's involved. 2 people said, Rabbi Olasky, we would really love to do it. You're definitely worth it, you know, but I don't think we're in a position. 2 people said, I think we can make it work. And they asked a few questions. Would you do this? And then I go, we'll get back to you. I never heard from them again. That was 4 years ago. But even though I like Pesach at home, I'm not going to come out against it. But I know Rabbanim who came out against it, and now they're scholars in residence at Pesach hotels. That hurts. Obviously, they're okay with it, but it hurts me to see this. Because that's called minatzvuyim, that's hypocrisy. If you think it's wrong, don't do it. It doesn't become right just because now you get an offer. You have to have integrity. And it's very hard. I'm not here to judge anybody. Somebody once said to me, Rabbi Alansky, you have integrity. You wouldn't sell out. And I said, no one offered me enough yet. But I'm sure for the right price, I would sell out too. Anyone who thinks they can't do it. Reb Osher Rubinstein tells a story that when he was in Panovich, he went to see his Rebbe, Reb Chatzkel, the Mashgiach from Panovich at the time. And he comes in, and it's Purim. They're all Purim Dick, and he's sitting there depressed. So I remember this had to have been in the 1960s, I guess. I assume. Maybe the 70s. But it was very rare that there were violent crimes among Jews. Yes, Arabs committed terrorist attacks, but that a Jew would chas v'shalom kill another Jew, very unusual. And that day, a Jew killed his business partner. And it was in the papers. And Chatzkel was very upset about this. It upset him very much. And he said to the boys, you know why I've never killed anybody? This is Mashgiach upon him. Because I never had enough motivation. Person doesn't know what they would do if they were pushed to a situation. But a person has to know. I ask myself all the time. I really do. If I was in a situation to die as Kiddush Hashem, what would I do? And I would like to believe that I could do it. Now, Rabbi Akiva, at the age of 120, who's being tortured to death for the crime of teaching Torah, is smiling. His Talmidim are like, well, Rebbe, what is this? Witchcraft? You know? He says, my whole life, I would say, v'chol nafshecha. 5 times a day, we say, v'chol nafshecha, in the first parasha Shema. Yeah? V'chol nafshechem. So we say twice in the morning, twice at night, and we say Kriya Shema L'mita. 5 times a day we say, I'm ready to give up my life. And now that I finally have the chance, I shouldn't be happy. Yeah, I could focus on the fact that they're ripping my skin off, but I choose to focus on the fact that I finally have a chance to show that I have integrity. And I'm honest. I've told this story in a past podcast, but I just got an email from somebody who says to me that he watches and rewatches them, and each time he gets another insight into it. So my apologies to you, because you must have heard this story before. But I'd been in Israel for a year. I went back, and I took my kids to Manhattan for a day. My brother lent me his van. Took my kids to Manhattan for a day. That they see Central Park or whatever it was. And a good friend of mine, Yonason Kalman Spark, lives in Minneapolis, came along to help out. And I'm circling around. I can't find any parking. Well, I'm in Manhattan near Central Park. No parking. Jackie Mason points out, you know, a Jew can have a $100,000 car, but he's not going to pay for parking. He's like, he's circling around looking for a place. Anyway, I got a van. There's no parking spots. I have no choice. I have to go into a lot. Now, this is 35 years ago. So money was different back then, yeah? And I pull into the thing, and they say it's $18 an hour. $18 an hour to park a car? The guy says, oh, I'm sorry, it's a van. It's double. $36 an hour. I said, you want to pay me $36 for an hour to park my car? He goes, want to go back out there? I was like, fine. Said, come on, kids. We're going to see Central Park in less than an hour. Anyway, we come back. And there's a different guy on duty. And he says, $18. You might And I wrestled with my innermost self because I felt the $18 was a ripoff, nevertheless, the $36. And through clenched teeth, I said, is it the same price for a van? He says, oh, no, you're right. It's $36. I paid it. We're pulling out. And as we're leaving, Jason Kalman looks at me and he says, what a tzaddik you are. I said, it's easy to be a tzaddik for $36. Could you be a tzaddik for $36,000? He says, what do you mean? During my first year in Harnof, I know two people whose cars were stolen. Mine was not, because I didn't have a car. But two people I know, their cars were stolen. I heard that phrase a lot. You know, and then someone told me, I'm going to Carlin Stolen. And I thought he said that his car was stolen. I didn't realize it was a Hasidus, Carlin Stolen. Anyway, but he says, my car was stolen. And they were both asked the same question by the insurance company, and they understood the implication of the question. They said, was your alarm on? And their policy was such that if the alarm was not on, they would not get any money. And they both told the truth. No, the alarm wasn't on. One guy told me, he says, my chavrusa started saying, maybe you could say like this, you could say like that, do that. And he says to me, I didn't realize what a friend you are. You're willing to lie and steal for me because you love me so much? I lost it. I lost it. You want me to lie? You want me to steal? At what price does integrity go out the window? How much can you buy a Jew for? So we're going to into Rosh Hashanah. This we have to work on. Let's be honest. Let's be consistent. Let's not make dramatic pronouncements. Let's not be the one who shushes everybody in shul and then we talk, which I've seen many times, and I never understand it. You see somebody talking to me, David, and then they start banging the table. No, no! Let's have that level of integrity as much as we can. It's hard. It's hard. Not here to judge anybody. What we all do here on the Rabbi Olasky Show is we all try to become a little better. Take a step forward. And let's see if we can take a step towards developing for ourselves a sense of integrity. Okay, now we come to the question and answer portion of the show. As I mentioned last time, anybody who would like to submit a question can go to rabbiolofsky.com/Q&A to submit a question. And we have a separate sponsorship for the Q&A. So just bring that to everyone's attention. Baruch asks, what is the proper response when a non-Jewish person asks you, why do you still pray to God when he has abandoned you for the last 2,000 years? You know, Louis XIV, the Catholic king of France, and after the Reformation, certain places remained Catholic and certain places became Protestant. Famously, of course, Germany became Protestant, and except for like Bavaria, certain areas. France was Catholic. Spain was Catholic. And he asked the Catholic philosopher Pascal, show me a miracle that I can see today. And he said, the Jews. How do you explain that there are still Jews in the world? There are no ancient people. You can go for years without meeting a Hittite, a Moabite. There are still Samsonites, but they're usually in the luggage department. But there are no ancient people left. And we're not here because there was an international movement to preserve us as an endangered species. In spite of everyone's best efforts, we're still here. That's a miracle. And that's what the Gemara says. How great is a shepherd who can protect one sheep from 70 wolves? So you take a look and say, God hasn't redeemed you yet. And the answer is, because we don't deserve it. But nonetheless, no matter how many times you guys try to destroy us, we're still here. Hodu Hashem ko hagoyim, shabchu ko umim. Praise God, nations of the world, ki gavar leno chasto, because God does chesed for us. You should praise God because he does chesed for us? Yeah, we don't even know how many times he tried to kill us. We don't even know all the plots that were made against us, all the pogroms that were planned, all the terrible tragedies that were stopped. The Amori were hiding in between these mountains to drop rocks and arrows on top of us. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu saw us. We were going through a narrow valley. So he brought the two mountains together, smashed them, and killed everybody. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu realized we'd never know that he miraculously saved us. So he showed us the body parts, you know, so we would know that we were miraculously saved. Otherwise, we would never know. We would have passed through. I have no idea that anything even happened. When someone says to me, you know, oh, God has abandoned you, this ain't called abandon. This is called hashkacha. We're only here for one reason, and that's because God watches over us. And when Mashiach comes, all the nations of the world are going to eat a big piece of humble pie. Those that are still around. And Anonymous asks, do you think AI can or someday will be able to create Chidush HaTorah? No. Lo yagatu matzasa lo mehemen. Right? It says, yagatu u matzasa mehemen. If a person worked hard and they found Torah, believe him. Lo yagatu matzasa lo mehemen. The person says, I didn't work hard and I found Torah, don't believe him. Torah is atochonin lo adam da'as. It is a gift from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It can't be done. Nobody can create a machine to come up with it. Everyone has a chelik of Torah that was given to them at Har Sinai, and if you work hard enough, you can get yourself some insight into it. But you can't make a machine that could possibly do that. By definition, it's impossible. And if you see that they start doing something, you can be pretty sure that it's not real. There's a Gemara, I think it was Rabbi Yochanan. He was standing outside the Beis Medrash, and everybody walked out. He said, what did you paskin today? And he says, I said this was Mutta, I said this was Asa, I said this was Tameh, I said this was Taha. He says, why? And the person told him his reasoning, and he said, it's wrong. He shrugged him up. So the guy got very upset. He says, oh my gosh, so what's the din? He says, no, just like you said. Happened over and over again. So someone says, my high. That Kodesh Baruch Hu gives a special hashkacha to the people to come up with the right psak. And if you have Siyata Deshmaya, and you have Yerushalayim, Hashem will make sure that you come up with the right psak. Famous story with Moshe Feinstein, where this woman comes and says, I don't know what to do. I was in Europe, and this Rav gave me a heter to get remarried after the Holocaust. You know, I brought edus that my husband was dead. And I got remarried, I had children, and now my husband just showed up. What do I do? Moshe says, tell me the story again. I was in Europe, and this Rav Paskin did that. Again. 3, 4, 5 times. And then he says, you're lying. He says, what? You're lying. That never happened. She starts crying. She says, it's true, but I thought my husband was dead. I didn't go for a psalm. Now, how did you know? He says, I knew that Rav. He couldn't make a mistake. AI doesn't have siyata d'shmaya. It's not going to happen. Anonymous asks, when did the minhag of only playing drums at weddings in Yerushalayim come from? I think it was in the 1800s. I think. There was a magefa, and a lot of people died of the plague. A lot of people died in Yerushalayim, and so they made certain takonis to maintain a certain level of avelis, and therefore they said you could have a drum. Now, some people hold it doesn't have to be dafka, a drum. It has to be one instrument. So there are some people who will have a wedding with just a keyboard, you know, but there are other places where they only have drums. Yeah. I was at a wedding where they only had a drummer. I was amazed what this guy was able to do. Yeah. With drums, different kind of drums, this and that. It was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. But of course, in the old days, it would just be a guy with a drum. In fact, when I was learning here in 1975, somebody said to me, there's a whole area of humor called Brisker jokes. It's a very specialized field. I've looked into it. Anyway, they said, what's the difference between a Brisker wedding and a Brisker funeral? The drummer. The idea being that they're not very enthusiastic. But anyway, I know that was why it was made. I'm pretty sure it was in the 1800s during a plague. By Anonymous, what's the Jewish approach to mindfulness and meditation? Are there legit Torah approaches? Is it all avodah zarah? Is there a good kind? Have you ever meditated? Meditation and mindfulness are two different things. You're mixing the two terms together. Mindfulness is an area in psychology where it says be aware of what's going on in your surroundings all the time. I've been teaching Maseilas Yesharim for many years, and one of the hardest words to translate is zehiras. So if you have the old translation, they call it watchfulness. Nobody uses the word watchfulness. Yeah? The new translation used the word vigilance. It's not a good translation. That's not really what watchful, that's not really what zehiras is. Zehiras is zahir, to be careful, right? Which the Maseilas Yesharim defines as not doing any action or having a thought or doing anything unless you've thought about it first. So now Baruch Hashem, society has caught up with us. That's mindfulness. What the Maseilas Yesharim calls zehiras, we call mindfulness. It means not doing anything mindlessly. Yeah, I bring the example of it that when I was on a tour as a kid, so every now and then we would stop and they would bring out a snack, these enormously large boxes of tasteless cookies. And they came in different shapes, but they all tasted exactly the same, like nothing. If you're old enough to remember the Stella Doro assorted mix, it was like that, you know. And you'd bite into it and the whole thing would turn into powder in your mouth and you would gag on it. It was terrible. The only way to wash it down was with petel, you know, there's that little drink that they had, you know, that's what it was there for. Otherwise, it formed the glue and you choked to death, you know. And these were terrible cookies. And as the summer went on, they would come around and say, you want some cookies? And everybody would take a bunch of cookies. And I realized that these are terrible, terrible cookies. So we stopped at some place. The guy's walking around the box of cookies. You want some cookies? Sure. People taking two or three. You want some cookies? Sure. Come to me. He said, you want any cookies? I said, no. He did not have the skills to be able to deal with that. So he just said again, do you want a cookie? And I said, no. He says, everybody takes a cookie. I said, they're terrible. They're tasteless. They turn to powder in your mouth. Why would I eat them? And I see the people around me nodding. Yeah, they are terrible cookies. So, okay, he goes to the next guy. Who's just nodding along with me? You want a cookie? Sure. Cookies. That's the opposite of mindfulness. That is just doing things out of rote, yeah, with meaninglessness. Mindfulness means to be aware, yeah? Now, meditation is different. Meditation is moving yourself out of this world into a different state. What does that mean? The Gemara in Brachos says, Chassidim Rishonim used to spend an hour before tefillah, tefillah means Shemoneh Esrei, an hour saying Shemoneh Esrei, and an hour coming down from the experience. Okay, so I understand. The first hour, they were saying Pesukei Zimra, they were preparing themselves, an hour saying Shemoneh Esrei. And then an hour coming down from the experience? A whole hour? Because they were so out of this world, it took them a whole hour to come down. That's pshat, meditation. Meditation means to concentrate to the point where you're so completely focused on what you're trying to do. Now, Arya Kaplan wrote a book called Judaism and Meditation, where he deals with more of the concepts of meditation in its sense. But the idea of meditation, one of the translations for Shemoneh Esrei is the silent meditation. What does that mean, the silent meditation? Rabbi Akiva was saying Shemoneh Esrei, and when he finished, he was on the other side of the river. He had managed to shuckle himself across the river and wasn't even aware of it. That's the intensity of what meditation is supposed to be. So yeah, it's definitely an essential part. That's what we call kavana. You could call it meditation, where you sit and you reflect on something. So yeah, I endorse both mindfulness and meditation. And that's it for this episode. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, RabbiElassi.com. You can submit a question. You can make a comment. You can sponsor an episode. You can sponsor a question and answer. We're going to be coming out with something new. I'll just give you a little heads up in case you're interested. A 5-minute vort on the parsha. know, sometimes people listen, and they're looking for something to say specifically in the parasha. We're going to start doing this, which I think will be interesting. And you'll have an opportunity to sponsor that if that sounds like something that you might be interested in. And you can sign up for one of the online shiurim. And that's it for now. I am David Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme. No, we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube, and more. It's Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.